Welcome to We Are the Watchers. Tom. And Leah. Are the Watchers.
Phil, I haven't used a party popper since Christmas 92.
Oh my gosh, no, they're brilliant. You buy one pack and then you use them for a couple of years.
You have a child. How would you not use a party popper?
We just got iPad these days. Who needs party poppers?
Just show her a video of it.
Manual, old, analog things.
Analog party poppers. Amazing. All right. I do have fanfare, but I decided to do it by myself because Tom and Lynn's is a very exciting episode. It's episode 52. That's a year.
Woo! Oh, I love the smell of the smoke.
Poppers. Look, there's streamers all over the microphones now. It's time to celebrate. We've been eating cake.
Yeah, and I put up a sign that says congratulations, and I almost bought one by accident that said Holy Communion. I got up to the register and I was like, well, that's the wrong one.
That's not right. Mm. Yeah, so festive in here today. I love it.
I've got my party pants on, which means no pants. Staying under the desk.
You're just doing the dance underneath. Mm. It's an exciting time to be alive, and it's an exciting time to be a podcast as well, because 52 episodes is a fair chunk, Lynn's.
Well, you've done well.
Thank you
very much. Very, very good. Like, you've got dedication.
We're dedicated.
Not missed a week.
No, we haven't.
No.
Bringing you the news, the views.
And having lots of fun. Mainly it's lots of fun.
Yeah. Right.
Which is what we're doing today. We've got a lot to get through. Of course, we'll do a bit of Walking Dead, bit of Good Place, and a few other shows. I know, Lynn, you've got a couple that you want to have a chat about.
Yep.
The news is varied, but I did want to first off, seeing we're in the celebratory sort of state, just have a look at some traditions, birthday traditions around the world, and see if we can incorporate them into our first birthday.
Sure.
So there's the picking ceremony. I know they do it in Korea. They may do it in China as well. When a child turns one, they get all dressed up in that amazing traditional Korean outfit, and then they sit them in front of things like calligraphy set. Or I went to a Korean first birthday once. I think they had like a stethoscope, and the kid got to pick whichever one they liked the most, and that was going to be their said career.
That's their destiny.
That's their destiny.
Wow.
Yeah. So I would imagine sometimes you'd be throwing, maybe throwing away a fryer. Something sort of towards the back and put some money.
But that's what I did with Shay's toys, like hide all the irons and stuff. Like, you don't need to do that.
No, you don't need to do that.
How's The Good Place not had an episode where we flash back to Chidi's first birthday and this is what happens to him?
Yes!
So much pressure. I struggled choosing what to have for breakfast.
I did see the panic in your eyes, actually, when I was mentioning that. It's pretty full on. Great tradition, though. I like it. German birthdays. Now, I'm not sure about these. So if you are from Germany, you can, of course, email us and set us straight. This is completely incorrect. The watcherspodcast@gmail.com. German birthdays, they get the candle, the cake, they do all the presents. But if you're a kid, you don't have to do any chores or homework for that day, which is pretty cool.
Nice.
That sounds legit.
However,
shout out to our German listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. If you are a man who is over 30 and you're still single, you get to celebrate your birthday by sweeping the city hall stairs while your friends throw garbage at you.
Sounds like something I do in my hometown.
Really?
Like,
okay.
You're over 30. Here's the broom.
Get to work. Get to work. If you're in somewhere like somewhere in the Caribbean, like Jamaica, I think this is quite common. Your family and friends will throw copious amounts of flour all over you, and that's really fun for them.
Yeah.
You would hate that.
Yeah.
That you would not tell anybody when your birthday is. It'd be a secret, a state secret. Once again, Norway.
Why flour? Do we know anything about
it? I don't know. It doesn't explain. I went to many different sites. They all said the exact same things. I think they're copying off each other.
Right.
Rude.
Citations required.
Oh, hell yeah. Now, if you are one of our Norwegian listeners, please let us know if this is true. But at birthday parties, guests can go fishing, but not for fish. They play a game known as fishing for ice cream where everyone pulls up a frozen treat attached to a piece of string. Now, I assume that that can only happen during winter. So if your birthday's in summer, you're not playing that game, or else you're just doing it in a big chest freezer. I need more information. Norwegian listeners,
so like,
please.
Like the ducks...
That's what I think it is.
With the hook and you hook a duck out at the fair.
Unless Elsa is hanging around, just like permanently. She's from Norway, isn't she?
She will not let it go.
Sweden? Somewhere. Norway.
I think Norway's right. She's in Norway Pavilion at Epcot.
Yep, we're going with that.
TheWatchersPodcast@gmail.com.
Fact check.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I just thought it'd be fun to have a few little birthday facts and see if we were jealous. But I think I'm okay with all of those. They can have all of them.
You're happy with gin parties?
Yeah, gin parties are great, right? And what was my other favourite birthday from when I was a kid? Obviously, I didn't have the gin party when I was a kid, but I had a pirate birthday, which I thought was amazing.
Yeah, nice.
Very cool.
That was really fun.
What sort of swashbuckling shenanigans?
Swashbuckling. So we had to all get dressed up, which is pretty easy when you're a kid. Mm. A lot of eye patches and bandanas. And the Women's Weekly birthday cookbook came out, and my mum made a pirate face,
yep,
which was really cool. And then we played games that are basically the same as your normal party games, but pirate themed. So instead of pin the tail on the donkey, it was probably pin the parrot on the pirate's shoulder or something like that.
Oh, sure.
So they're all themed. She got really into DIYing stuff because she's an art teacher, so she would draw the pin the tail on the donkey, except it would change every year.
What was your favourite birthday?
Oh, I think when I was 9, I had monkeys come.
I've had this
actual
story.
Monkeys?
Yeah, we had a van shop and they had monkeys and they came out. And like it was the last year you could have performing monkeys before it got outlawed.
Wow.
So that, like there was a tiny capuchin that was riding on a bike and another one that got dressed for bed and climbed into a tiny little bed. And all throughout, you could hear the van being rocked outside because they'd brought their chimpanzee.
And they can get a bit feisty. Wow.
Yeah.
Don't they eat people's faces from time to time?
Yeah.
Oh.
I'd say he's the reason that the rest of the monkeys weren't allowed out anymore.
Fair enough. How old were you?
I think I was 9.
That's a good age for a monkey party.
That's a great birthday party. Was it a surprise for you or did you know?
I knew, but the people coming did not know. So it went down in annals of coolness.
What about you, Linz? Do you have any highlights?
As a pessimist, I don't remember too many highlights. I remember when I was 11, I invited everyone from my school to my birthday party. My mum made so many sandwiches. And
she got out of control.
Just Gemma Simpson turned up. No one else. So we had to eat like 6 plates of sandwiches between the two of us.
Not so,
so
much.
So thanks, Gemma, but screw you, everyone else.
Not so much a birthday celebration, more as a eating challenge.
Yeah, you've got to reframe these things.
Yeah, absolutely. You really do. You really do.
Yes, they do want to build a snowman. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
Well, we're going to continue celebrating throughout the episode, but we do have to stop for some news because there's been a bit of some huge news as well as some other smaller news. I'll kick it off with, of course, there have been those wildfires in California over the last week. Devastated. Quite a lot of hundreds of homes have gone. People have lost their lives. It's been absolutely terrible. I know Jared Butler lost his Malibu house. I think
Miley Cyrus.
Yeah, Miley did as well. But also Westworld, the set that was called Western Town. That was the Woosley fire that took that one. That has been around since 1927. Paramount Studios bought it back then. Then they sold it, I think, to the National Park Service. So, but it's still used as a film location. American Sniper, Scream, Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman, Westworld are just some of the ones. I took out the whole list because there are a lot. But I wonder if this is going to prolong Westworld.
Well, didn't they build a replica of it last year at South by Southwest?
Oh, we'll just use that one then. They did too.
Yeah, just outside town.
Okay, pop down to Austin to do that. But devastating. Well, we call them bushfires, but wildfires over there have been absolutely horrible.
So was it just the Western Town that was burnt, not the underneath and other goings on?
No, just the actual West.
Okay.
Yeah. Cowboy Town. Tom, what other news have you found?
So I'm particularly excited because There's a documentary that's been announced called The Orange Years, which is about the formation and the early success story of Nickelodeon back in the mid early to mid-90s. And it looks like it's, you know, they've got Kenan and Kel.
Pete and Pete.
Larissa Olaniak from Alex Mack.
Oh, I used to love that show.
Sort of, all these great shows, they've got them, all these people coming back to talk about how...
Oh, that's so cool.
What a cool creative spot it was for young people in that period.
That was a great time to watch Nickelodeon. And for us, it was around the time that we got cable TV here.
I was going to say, as Nickelodeon was one of the big package launches as part of Foxtel when it came to Australia. Mm. Nickelodeon was one of the premium offerings.
We got everything.
Yeah.
Before that, we would get sprinkles of Nickelodeon programs. I think ABC would snatch most of them up and put them on in the afternoon. I remember the 80s, early 90s show, You Can't Do That on Television.
You can't.
And you can't. They've not done it since.
Is that the one with loads of child stars?
Yeah, the sketch comedy stuff. Yeah. Oh, no. Well, sort of. I think the only one who's still famous would be Alanis Morissette. But there was, I think there was a Mickey Mouse one that had Ryan Gosling.
That's and, Mickey Mouse Club.
Britney, Christina Aguilera.
JT,
yeah. That's probably what you're thinking about. But Nickelodeon was huge. Maybe it's because I just don't watch it anymore, but it doesn't seem to be... It doesn't seem to have that flavour, that feel that a lot of those programmes like Pete and Pete had.
Well, in the early stages, it was very influenced by MTV, and it was about being counterculture programming and jumping on that. Almost Beavis and Butthead sort of vibe.
Yeah, yeah.
Of fighting back against the system and, you know, young Gen X, this sort of stuff. That's not as needed today. Just watch YouTube for that.
Yeah, they've still got a lot of things going on though, Nickelodeon. They've got the Slime Fest Awards. I don't know.
Always lots of fun.
That's what I'm going to call it. The Slimies.
They got Nick Jr.
Which I feel like is probably their stronger brand at the moment.
I'm sure they had the School of Rock, the TV
they
show.
Do.
Oh, is that
Nickelodeon.
Where that is?
Okay. JoJo Siwa is a big star of Nickelodeon.
She's probably the biggest.
So they're doing all right, and they're diversifying enough. So, you know, they've got JoJo Siwa, who's kind of like an ambassador on YouTube, and School of Rock, which feeds into that kind of old school. But these things, you don't realise how big they are until you've got retrospect. So, like, the 90s, you didn't think that it was that big. And then in 20 years' time, I don't know, someone who got slimed is going to come on a documentary and tell us
all about
how good the good old days were.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so I think that'll be out early next year or something. I think it's going to premiere at a festival in the next few weeks.
Perfect.
Yeah.
We'll get some more of an insight as to what's in there.
I can't wait to... I want to play a game of who changed the most.
Yeah.
So, like, Kenan is the exact damn same. You see him on Saturday Night Live and he's still playing silly characters.
Is he one of the longest cast
members? He is the longest.
Of SNL, yep. Wow.
Kenan was in Mighty Ducks 2 as well.
I don't remember that.
A really cool role. He was the knuckle puck guy.
Yes, we really quacked at the principal. Are we ducks or what? You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
This is the second week we've been talking about Mighty Ducks. I feel like the revival has to happen. They've got to do it.
It was our favourite film in my house growing up. We borrowed that from the video store.
Over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And then your dad taped it off television, but he didn't tape it. He didn't put it on pause when the ads were on, so you had to fast forward through the ads. My dad thought he was really like doing an amazing thing, you know, solid for us by taping it. But then like when we'd have friends over, we'd be watching movies that he taped off television. We were so embarrassed about having to fast forward the ads. God. Sorry, our dad doesn't pause them whilst recording. So embarrassing. Any other news before we get to probably the biggest one of the week or month?
Sure, a few more. So Kingsman 3 is definitely moving ahead. Kingsman, the Secret Service, number 3. However, they've said Eggsy won't be involved this time. Taron Egerton, who is the main character from the first two.
So what's going to happen?
Well, I've been hearing rumblings that they're finally going to move forward with the prequel. Well, not really even a prequel, but just Kingsman set in a different period, and it's going to be set in 1914, or maybe even slightly earlier.
So just before the Great War, the First World War.
Yeah, starring Ralph Fiennes in the Colin Firth role as the mentor.
Ralph's the older... Yeah, Ralph Fiennes.
Voldemort.
Yep.
He'll be playing the super suave spy training a younger guy. And I think this is very
sounds
cool.
Sounds pretty cool, actually.
It does. I don't know where, like, they've said this will be Kingsman 3, but it might just be that it's the third Kingsman movie without being actual Kingsman 3, because there's lots of talk of expanded universe stuff they can do. They could focus on the American Secret Service and, you know, there's lots of different avenues they can pursue. That said, the guy that plays Eggsy has already spoken with the press saying, I'll be back for a completion to our trilogy, but this is to continue expanding.
Interesting.
So my question is, the first one had Mark Hamill, the second one had Elton John, and they love to get big-name people to play themselves. Now, obviously, they can't do that with something set in the 1900s, but who would you get, and like, what famous stunt cast would you cast as someone from that period?
Could you get someone from someone who has played a character of that era?
Sure.
Just to reprise. Like, I'm talking about a biopic sort of thing. So you just grab that actor and throw them in as said famous.
So, like,
person.
You could get Robert Downey Jr. to play Charlie Chaplin.
Charlie Chaplin, that's
using
it.
Using the Iron Man, no, what was it, Captain America 3 technology of de-aging him.
And also Captain Marvel with Nick Fury.
Sure, yes. So Marvel's got that great technology to de-age. Who would, like, I think Robert Downey Jr. playing Charlie Chaplin again.
That'd be awesome.
As young would be great.
Similar era too. That would be really good. Who else could probably do a bit of an old-timey? Yeah, well, I know Lynn's wants to talk about Keira Knightley a little bit later on, but I feel
she's
that
she's a classic.
She's got the old-fashioned face, I think, that could probably. But who would she play, though?
Bend it like Dunkirk.
She'd just be like someone who just Charlestons maybe in the background.
Yeah, there's a famous woman called Louise Brooks, and she's the one with the bob and pearl necklace.
Yeah, yes.
Someone like that.
Yeah, get her to do that. You wouldn't need to de-age her. She's got quite nice skin.
Mm.
Quite nice skin.
And then you've got all the mobs, the mob bosses.
Why, Iyada.
So, you know.
You could get the cast from Bugsy Malone, but now.
Sure.
Because they Scott were kids Bio back there. Yeah, absolutely.
Jodie
Foster and, what's his name? He was in Press Gang. Dexter Fletcher.
You know he's a director now?
He did.
Really?
We're coming right back around because he directed Eddie the Eagle, which Taron Egerton and Hugh Jackman starred in, which is a surprisingly good film.
And he finished off the Bohemian Queen.
Yeah, right, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Bohemian Rhapsody film that's just come out.
It's just supposed to be amazing. Everybody is raving about that
and
movie.
And he got horribly killed in Kick-Ass 1, which is written by the same guy who does Kingsman. Look at that, all coming back around together.
6 degrees of craziness. Dexter Fletcher.
Craziness. another bit of cool news. So we've talked a few times about Disney's streaming service that they're going to be launching next year. They've confirmed that it's going to be called Disney Plus.
Okay.
Like with a plus sign.
Like PlayStation Plus.
Yes, yeah. For a long time it was being referred to as Disney Play.
Uh-huh.
So now it's going to be Disney Plus.
That's probably a better idea because Disney Play almost alludes to the fact that you can play a Disney video
exactly.
game. Yeah.
Exactly. So we talked a little bit last week about the rumoured stuff that's potentially coming down that pipeline. There was a few more confirmations this week. So they did finally confirm that there is a Loki series starring Tom Hiddleston.
Which I think is going, if they start the streaming series like off with that, you're immediately going to get subscribers.
Well, that's it. They've said that they're planning
that's
on doing
huge.
5 to 10 TV shows a year.
Yep.
There are 3 Marvel ones they've announced, formally or informally. So Loki with Tom Hiddleston, Scarlet Witch, and potentially The Vision, which is...
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. And then there's also a lot of talk about doing a buddy film of Winter Soldier with Falcon, who are Cap's 2 mates that have a very antagonistic relationship.
That'd work.
That could be great fun. Yeah. Basically, taking the characters that maybe don't have enough of a big following to do a full-blown movie, and instead giving them a 6 to 8 episode TV series.
Yeah, it's a great experiment as well. They must have a bit more license to have some fun.
Well, they experimented with Netflix with the Defenders series and those couple of characters, but they're off to the side, whereas this one, because it's within Disney, they've said it's going to be connected. And because these are not ongoing series that they're trying to do 22, 23 episodes a year, they're only doing 6 episodes maybe every year or two, if that, might just be a one-off mini-series. They can go all out with the budget and
have a lot of fun.
And condense that storyline. Don't sort of elongate it out to this drawn out, exhausting thing where people are like, I did like it at first, but...
Yeah. The sheen has worn off.
Yeah.
So we already know a little bit about The Mandalorian, which is the Jon Favreau-directed Star Wars set TV show.
It's probably the one, for me, that I'm most hyped about.
Sure.
Yeah.
Following Bounty Hunters and whatnot, so we better get some of the guys off Empire Strikes Back.
I
want my Bosk, I want my IG-88.
Of course you do.
My Forlom.
You've spoken about it before, and it's all about the riffraff in that universe,
which is watching them
and see how they go about their world.
Well, I love that they've announced this show, which is going to be... There's another one that they've announced this week, which is Cassian Andor, who was Diego Luna in Star Wars Rogue One. He's a ruthless spy who's working for the rebels, but we see him brutally murder someone to keep a secret in the first 5 minutes of the film. He's going to be headlining a separate show that's, I think it's set just before the events of A New Hope. Yes, so before Rogue One.
Yep.
I imagine then we'll probably see Alan Tudyk, who played the droid.
Oh yeah, the big huge droid.
But the one who stole the film,
that was
so funny.
Yeah, he was awesome.
Yes, so I think
he's got a story.
Yeah, I think it's going to be the same thing of playing in that world of scum and villainy. So basically, in Star Wars Expanded Universe and stuff, you've got the Order. And you've got the Force and the good guys, the rebels. You've got the bad guys, the Empire,
the Siths,
and that sort of stuff. And then everyone else is just called scum and villainy.
it's so like a pirate. They're the pirates of
the universe. It's Jabba
the
Hutt.
Yeah, yeah.
Your Boba Fett's.
That's where the cool stories are.
Yeah.
Oh, amazing. Looking forward to that.
A trailer for Toy Story 4 came out last night. I don't know if either of you caught it. Well, it already is messing with me emotionally.
Oh, cool.
Because,
that's good.
Well, it's all the characters holding hands, skipping around. So the camera's in the circle and the characters are skipping around, like smiling into the camera, which is a clear reflection of the shot in Toy Story 3 where they're all holding hands waiting to go in the fire, like the incinerator, and accepting their fate. So it just made me flash back to that. And then there's a plastic fork with a face drawn on it and some bad plasticine arms attached. And this fork is like, I'm not supposed to be here. So apparently that's Forky, and Forky is a main character in the film.
I have a lot of time for that.
And it's all about imagination, creating a toy, and whether you should accept that imaginative persona as being equal to the rest.
Oh, it's going
to
be a hit. I mean, it's Toy Story, so it's got the whole Toy Story name behind it, but you also know that they've created a great story.
That's right. Yeah. Forky is being voiced by Tony Hale. You might know him as Buster Bluth from Arrested Development.
Right. Yeah. He's in Veep as
well.
Yes, I was
going to say he's Selena Meyer's.
He likes wearing
assistant.
That shoulder bag.
Yep, that's given him some severe neck and shoulder issues.
I can see that.
He's done a lot of animated work. He's got a really great downtrodden voice, and I think.
And for Forky, he'd be perfect.
It's just, I saw it. I was like, are you kidding me? Is this the thing? And then I went and read the synopsis. I'm like, okay, this is the thing.
You're
Forky.
On board.
Forky's the thing.
So speaking of voices, we knew that Ryan Reynolds was going to voice Pikachu in Detective Pikachu.
Yes.
I saw the trailer for it.
Yes.
It actually looks pretty fun.
It looks fun. I don't know if it's Pikachu. I'm not enough into my Pokemon.
Well, yeah, same.
I
played Pokemon Go. That's probably as far as I've gone into the world of Pokemon. But I can see just by the trailer that they're doing that mass catering where they've got jokes that obviously adults are going to get. They've got the nostalgia going because a lot of adults grew up with Pokemon, and also they're catering for the kids as well.
That's right.
Sure.
I've crushed a lot of trainers and taken down a fair few gyms in my time.
Yeah, you have.
But I know people that are a lot more into their Pokemon, and I don't know, Pikachu's never spoken before other than a bit of Pika Pika.
Yeah. But they play on that in the trailer. Yeah. That's the whole...
So is it like, because Ryan Reynolds has got a real cool tone with adults.
He is
going to
cool tone with adults. He's
invent a that. New kids
it
cool
doesn't
tone?
Seem like it.
He's, no. It's just Deadpool for kids.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of like Yo Gabba Gabba when it first came out.
Sure.
It's just a little bit off the wall from the usual kid stuff.
Yeah. I think... Yeah.
Very good.
I actually have some positive thoughts towards this. I feel a bit ready to watch. I think with Ryan Reynolds there, you'll get more people watching it because of him rather than because of Pokemon.
Sure.
A lot of crossover.
Become a watcher on Facebook. Facebook.com/WeAreTheWatchers.
Anything else in the news department?
Two more. One, there's a Breaking Bad movie announced.
Oh, so they have announced this.
Yes, they confirmed because they've been getting things ready to film in Albuquerque and everyone's going, what exactly are you up
to? Hang on a second.
And they've confirmed that Aaron Paul is back and it will be following what happened to him after.
Cool. Yeah, nice. Yeah. Oh, well, that's already a hit. Already.
So where did they leave him?
On the run.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to say anything because if you haven't seen the end of Breaking Bad, like it's
fair okay. enough. Yeah.
It's hard.
He's on his own.
It is a while ago, but it's also in this world of binge watching.
It's not that
things
long
are
ago.
Still new. Yeah. Okay. Cool. Well, that's exciting.
And then finally, Mystery Science Theater 3000, which is
it's a mouthful.
It is. It's
I'm
the
not
show
attempt.
That it's the show that makes fun of other movies. I don't know if you've ever seen it before.
I've never seen it.
Okay, so it's been going for quite some time. It was away for a while, and then Netflix revived it again. And basically, they take old films that are pretty much in the Creative Commons that are very, very bad. They sit down and screen it. And
So is it like a group of people?
So it's meant to be this guy stuck on an outer space mission with like a robot and an alien and this sort of stuff. And the only way to stay sane is to watch these transmissions of bad old movies.
Fun.
And they sit there and it's one human and these other characters. And the other characters are being puppets being operated by people that voice them and stuff like that. And they just hang shit on the movie. That's all it is. So you're watching the movie with like the silhouette of the characters in the audience in front. And like one will stand up to say their bit and this sort of stuff. Very, very pithy, very, very clever. Some of them are pretty hit and miss. Depends on what movie they're making fun of.
So it's like Gogglebox in space.
Yes.
Sure, but from years ago and for nerds. So it's very reference heavy and this sort of stuff.
Okay, so you definitely have to know about it. So that's back?
So it's been back for, I think, maybe two seasons now, and Patton Oswalt is involved, and Jonah Ray, who's Chris Hardwick's second in charge kind of guy, and they've got a really core crew, Felicia Day, who used to be on Buffy, core crew of people hanging shit on the movies and writing behind the scenes and this sort of stuff, and so the revival has been really well received. They've announced that their new season, which is, I believe, season 12, is dropping on Thanksgiving Day. And I'm so excited because one of the movies they're making fun of this year is called Mac and Me. Have you ever heard of Mac and Me?
I don't know if I have. I'm getting confused with Marley.
Like an 80s robot.
Oh, you're close.
Who was best friends with... Or is it... No, not from Joey.
No. Mac and Me is a cash-in... funded by McDonald's, trying to make a E.T.-style film from the 80s. And it's about a boy who's in a wheelchair, and he befriends a like really cheap-looking bad version of E.T., and they get up to hijinks and mischief together. And anyway, the reason why this... Like, it's a bad, bad movie.
It's
and
that's amazing for
it's,
me.
It's amazing, but in its horribleness. And like, so there's some really full-on corporate shilling throughout that film. But there's every time Paul Rudd goes on Conan O'Brien for the last 22, 23 years or something like that, every time when Conan said, hey, have you got a clip to show us from your new film, Paul Rudd sets up the movie of whatever he's there to promote and then instead shows the same clip, which is the wheelchair getting out of control near a cliff, and the boy rocketing down the hill with Mac chasing after him, and they both shoot off the side of the cliff,
just
fall into
the
water and pop up
time.
And then Mac pops his head up and spits out water. So he's pulled this trick at least twice a year for the last 22 years or something like that, and apparently Conan hates it.
Really? That makes it way better.
But he just won't stop doing
it. I love traditional
it.
Jokes, you know, that you just can't stop. Like, if he went on and didn't show that, can you imagine the uproar now?
They do fake outs and stuff of, like, oh, here we're going to show something. And he once showed a different clip from Mac and Me, but then later in the interview showed that same clip again.
Oh, I love that.
So these guys hanging shit on that movie is going to be amazing. I have a feeling they'll probably try and work in Paul Rudd somehow, because they do have celebs
have
come on.
Off,
you know, someone was in an escape pod that crashed into the ship this
week.
What
if they've got Conan on?
That would be good.
He'd be so displeased.
Strong enough to lift both Thor and Granthar's hammer for double avenging. You're listening to We Are the Watchers.
Finally, we cannot not talk about it because it's just such big news. And I guess you could say it shouldn't be a shock, but it also is the passing of the legend that is Stan Lee at the age of 95 this week. I say it's a shock, Linz, because, yes, his age was old. Like, 95's huge.
Yeah.
But he just kept working. He was always working.
Yeah, sure.
He was always there. He cameoed in every single Marvel movie.
He was at conventions nearly every weekend.
Yeah.
When was the last time he was in a film? Ant and Wasp.
That was the last time he was on screen. He had a cameo in Teen Titans Go to the Movies, which was only 2 or 3 months ago. That's an animated DC movie.
Yeah,
and they make a joke about Stan Lee wandering and saying something. And they're like, aren't you supposed to only be in Marvel movies? He's like, what? This is a DC movie. I got to get out of here.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I read something saying that he just likes to create. Like, other people like sports or, you know, taking the dog for a walk or something, or doing a puzzle. Like, he wants to create. So, like, how can you retire?
You can't. You yeah, like that's that anyway? True. And he... In that terms, we could see him, and you should see him, as an artist. And artists don't go, I'm retiring now.
Yeah, sure.
They just don't.
He's got a TV show over in the UK at the moment called Stan Lee's Lucky Man, which is James Nesbitt, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's a guy.
Yeah.
But what I think he was in Sliding Doors, James Nesbitt.
Sure. Oh, you've seen him in a lot of things.
Yeah.
He's quite famous.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a character that's like a series that Stan Lee created for him a few years ago at the age of 91 or something like that. Like, the guy never stopped.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. And now, of course, there's going to have to be movies and, you know, other creative outlets that he would have had some sort of part in, whether it's a lot or a small amount, that won't have the Stan Lee cameo, that won't have the Stan Lee
well,
touch.
Look, I think they've already recorded cameos for a bunch of potential upcoming movies. I know a few years ago they got him to film the stuff from like Doctor Strange through to Avengers 3 all in one day. They got him together and they said, this is the stuff we're thinking, and just filmed it all in one go. So it wouldn't surprise me if they've got more stuff in the bank.
Okay.
It wouldn't surprise me at all if he gave them permission to use his digital likeness to create, you know. But I think more... We saw in Guardians 2 there was a shot of him talking to the Watchers, which are these big-headed aliens that observe the whole universe.
Yeah.
And there's a running theory going that Stan Lee within the Marvel movies is a Watcher, that he's been there at all these key events observing and keeping notes. So it wouldn't surprise me if they elevate him into some sort of, you know, maybe he can become the living embodiment of entropy or eternity or these great concepts that the Marvel universe has as people, that he could become this... much larger than a human figure.
Because he was in a video game recently.
He was in the Spider-Man game recently.
Yeah, so they've definitely got his 3D model likeness.
Yeah.
In several formats.
Yep.
To pull out as needed. Yeah.
Interesting.
Oh, I wish he was the voice inside Robert Downey Jr., like in the Iron Man suit.
Oh, yeah, the voice in there. You struggle to think of another person who has had so many huge characters that he created or he had some part in creating that now the whole world knows. You struggle to find somebody like that.
Yep.
He's so prolific.
I think the only one that comes to mind is Walt Disney. It's even comes close.
Mm. And even then...
And he wasn't creating characters a lot of the time. Like, there were certain ones that he did, but a lot of his biggest success was adapting Snow White or adapting fables.
Yeah, there's definitely differences in who they were and what they did. Because somebody wrote on Twitter today about him expanding universes,
mm-hmm.
and that's really true metaphorically as well. Like,
yeah,
you know, all that he's put out, these kids have picked up, and then they go out and expand their imagination, their universe. So it's kind of like he's created this real big,
looking at it,
ever-expanding creativity.
Seth Rogen put out my favourite tweet about the subject so far. It says, "Thank you, Stan Lee, for making people who feel different realise they are special."
That's nice. Yeah, that's really nice. Yeah. Well put. And there has been a lot of people talking about him, and there will be a lot of people who will talk about him for years to come.
Yeah. Well, my friend's three-year-old is picking up comics at the moment.
That's cool. That's so cool.
He's got just an amazing legacy that's going
to
extend.
To be able to entertain three-year-olds to 93-year-olds and beyond is...
For my money, the greatest alliterative artist that ever existed. He mighty Marvel way. And like the stuff that he... And you could read plenty of them in reprints and stuff, but he handled all the editorial and letters to the editor in the back of things. And he'd give out a no prize if you could find a mistake in one of the comics. He'd let you know this sort of stuff. But it was always, "Hey there, mighty Marvel believers!" And just I can hear his voice in my head. I'm sure everyone can. We've seen him in enough cameos and films like this. But I can hear that voice in my head, and the way he alliterated and would put words together had a huge effect on my language and the way I write.
Interesting.
And a champion of diversity as well, big champion. He
created Black Panther.
Yeah.
And he, I saw a quote earlier today about him, about the fact that he, you know, with Marvel and even potentially before that with Captain America, because Captain America was before Marvel.
It was in the 40s.
Timely
comics.
That he wanted to or did make superheroes with flaws.
Yes. So I actually wrote a thesis about this at uni.
Really interesting.
About this very subject. DC had been, you know, going strong since the 40s and had a great deal of success with Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, these characters, who are gods that have come down to help humanity. And they are a higher ideal that we have to attest to, you know, attempt to attain. Whereas Stan's stuff, you know, starting with Fantastic Four and going on from there, and that was in 62, I want to say, they were all humans first that underwent some process that made them more than, but they
like
retained
Spider-Man. And,
retained their flaws. The other way of looking at it is the 40s, we were afraid of the other. It was all about going to war with the enemy, and so you needed something that was not quite as tangible. The threat was always away, so you needed a great person of your kind to go and fight them. Whereas the 60s, it was all about Cold War. It was about not trusting your neighbor. It was about the fear of science and atomic weaponry and the changes in the world and technology. So that's what all the Marvel heroes are far more dealing with, that sort of threat and coming from that perspective of they were altered. There was something about them that was changed, but it didn't fix them.
Mm.
And so they've got to struggle through that.
Yeah, interesting.
Go. And there's a really interesting documentary we watched last year.
Yeah.
What was it called?
Superheroes Decoded, I think. Yeah.
So, that's a good one to watch if you want to sort of see a bit of his history.
And what a great time now to be able to look back on docos like that and try and learn as much as you can about the man.
I'm also going to try and track down. There's an episode of Ultimate Spider-Man, which was a cartoon series in the 2000s, where Stan played the janitor at Peter's school. And apparently, and like this is a behind-the-scenes story, apparently he came in one day looking glum, and the executive producer of the show said to him, "What's wrong?" He's like, "You never give me enough lines." So they wrote an episode for him in the next season where it turned out that he was an undercover S.H.I.E.L.D. agent there to keep an eye on Peter, and the two of them go on a badass adventure for the entire episode.
Oh, very cool.
And Stan saves the day. It's so good. So, yes, I'm going to go and watch that.
Oh, yeah, just go and watch anything or read anything that Stan Lee has done, just to give yourself a moment to pay homage to, wow, a talented man is an understatement. All right, we have got so much still to get through. We've got The Walking Dead and The Good Place coming up for you very soon, a nice little quiz, but we should probably suggest a couple of things to watch.
Sure, why not?
Linz, what have you been watching?
So, I watched something called Feminists. What were they thinking? And even myself, like, you say the word feminist, it just kind of creates a bit of an eye roll. Like, it's just, no one likes an ist.
Yeah, it's definitely got a, it's, I wouldn't say tainted, but yeah, it's got a stigma around
it. Yeah, the word is flawed, but the cause has meaning. And like, yeah. So it was just a real good, like, look back on history. It started off looking through pictures in a book that someone did in the 70s. I have a low attention span.
So you're on your phone already.
So yeah, so I was a little bit on my phone and like, but I thought, oh no, I'll see it through, and I'm glad I did because it did sort of had some really good points and some really good lessons from the past.
So do you think that some of these lessons forward. That perhaps were being talked about from the 1970s? Do you think that they still apply today, or do you think that they, to you, did they feel dated?
Oh, it's part of history, so they were important at the time. Mm. It's definitely different now, but then at the same time, it's still the same. Some of the things that people want in terms of quality, it's the same things that they wanted.
Yeah.
Years ago.
Oh, we still talk about the pay gap is still a thing.
And then the whole, like, women being in control of their bodies, which is
we're still talking about
recurring, absolutely. Argument.
2018's definitely had that in the hashtag Me Too.
Yeah.
To a certain extent, it's a little bit different, but yeah.
So it was related. It was a good thing to watch, just, to hear it from that perspective, without too much eye roll. It was just a. For both men and women, like, just to see the journey that has had.
Mm.
Did you get a definite answer?
What are they thinking?
Yeah, what were they thinking?
I saw a brilliant picture once that said, "What are we? Who are we? Women? What do we want? We don't know.
We just want all of it." But you were saying just before we started recording that watching this made you remember about something that Keira Knightley said. You were like, not sure about that.
So Keira Knightley on Ellen a few weeks ago said that she doesn't let her daughter watch The Little Mermaid because she gave her voice up for a man to get with Eric.
Yeah, right.
And again, if you look at the history of Disney characters, princesses, she was a feminist for her time. And, like, she didn't give her voice up for Eric. She was singing about wanting to go to...
From the very beginning land, of that movie, she wanted to...
From the go, yeah.
I think she's far more motivated about getting away from King Triton than she is about chasing Eric.
Mm.
It's about
bright
seeking
independence. Bright young women, sick of swimming... Ready to stand? You know how more feminist.
Yeah. Why is she so impressed with the fork? Her dad holds a trident.
Well, that's a really good point. But you know how in the late 80s, early 90s, maybe it was the early 90s, they had matchbox cars and then they went, let's make them smaller, and everyone was really impressed with Micro Machines. Oh, maybe it's a similar thing.
Oh, sure.
Sure, Micro Machines were ace.
They were really rad.
I wonder what they eat with down there. Yeah. Maybe they just fish it. Like,
well, they are fish, aren't they? So they could just do the gulping.
I've heard actually with Aquaman coming out soon, and this is kind of gross, that anytime someone gets out of the water before they can speak, they've got to throw up the water in their lungs.
Yeah, you would need to.
Because that makes complete sense. Because if you're under the water, there's not going to be any air in your lungs. You're not going to talk that way.
They should do like a brutal modern version of The Little Mermaid.
Starring like Keira Knightley.
So yeah, get her in. She can tell us what she's thinking.
She'd be, a screen... playwright. I don't know.
But maybe I'm just like personally affected by it because Little Mermaid came out in 88, maybe I'm wrong.
So you've grown up
So I was 7 or 8 then, and that was my princess, do you know what I mean? So like, lay off my princess.
Yeah, you She's tell all right. her.
And like, you wouldn't have Brave or Moana or Frozen, Little Mermaid paved the way.
She did pave the way. People still love her.
Yeah.
And because she's banned Little Mermaid, I know exactly what movie her daughter's going to go out of her way to try and watch.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, you can't ban things. You can try.
You can try, but it doesn't always work.
You're going to have that conversation sooner or later. And you can watch things and just use them as a cautionary tale, if that's how you feel. Like, perfect. You know, don't do it like that.
Yeah, she may not take every single story twist from Little Mermaid and adapt it into her life.
Yeah.
Because humans don't do that.
Start brushing her hair with a fork.
Please don't disturb my friend. He's dead tired. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
Tom, what have you been watching?
So, there's two things that I've watched this week. Cool. And they're not new things.
What do you mean? Have you been going old school?
Oh, no, I've watched new stuff, but whatever. You can wait. Wait, this is a party week.
Yeah.
I'll start with Ballers. So I finally finished season 4 of Ballers.
And?
It's quite different now. I like it, but I don't know if I like it.
There's mixed feelings coming from Tom now, isn't there, about this?
Yeah, so it's the show has changed a great deal. First two seasons, it was just about NFL, and the Rock and Rob Corddry were two guys as financial advisors to NFL stars.
Yeah.
And then in season 3, they decided that was going to be a bit boring, so instead they set out to try and bring a stadium and a team to Las Vegas, who doesn't have an NFL team. And it became quite timely, and it was dealing with the stuff of, like, the Giants moving and, Patriots, all this stuff that was real-world stuff. Like, they presciently guessed 6 months beforehand, so by the time the episode came out, it was really timely and very interesting.
They must have been pretty stoked about that.
They were. Yeah. So it gave me great confidence for what they do for the next year. And instead, they've moved away from Miami, where the show has always been, and moved to L.A., and the two of them have bought a action sports company from Russell Brand.
Comedian. It's just, if I was going to cast someone who looked like they were interested in sports, I would not cast Russell Brand.
Well, he's meant to be like the savant director of skateboard videos. So he's quite clearly playing a bit of a Spike Jones.
Right.
90s Spike Jones character. That beloved aorta sort of figure. And, you know, his character bangs on a lot about sobriety at the beginning and this sort of stuff, and things don't go to plan and he falls off the rocker and holy shit does he make things complicated for the rest of the season. But it's just so detached from what the show used to be. Like, there was not a lot of football. The football that we did see was dealing with the front office of general managers debating whether or not to hire the characters that we'd been following for years.
Interesting.
So a lot of the characters that we'd been following for years might pop up for 2 minutes every 3 episodes.
Okay.
And
so they're doing cameos.
Yeah, well, it just that they're not based in Miami anymore, so they've kind of had to bend over backwards to bring a lot of the characters to LA, they're coming visit for the week, or this sort of stuff.
That's an interesting plot challenge.
Yes. Now, the season ends with, again, blowing up the premise and looking like next year could be quite different. They are confirmed for season 5. Spencer Strassmore, The Rock, decides to take on the NCAA, which is the college football. Now, I don't know, it doesn't get a lot of talk over here, but in the States, if you want to be in the NFL at the end of school, you need to get selected for a good college and you might get a scholarship there, but that then leads into playing professionally.
Okay.
And that college years is used as your tryout. And the colleges make a stupid amount of money from this stuff, selling TV rights and selling stadium rights and stuff, and the players don't earn a cent.
It's a bit rough.
Yeah, so
there's no injury protection or there's absolutely nothing helping these kids that are making all the money that old rich white guys are getting.
Except for, I guess, the promise that if they do make it into the NFL and that they do end up being someone who gets on the field for more than 5 minutes, they will make a lot of money.
Yes. So there's a lot of ifs and this sort of stuff. Mm. So basically throughout the course of the season, we learn, I won't say what, but some stuff has happened in The Rock's past that's caused him to absolutely despise this group. And he is giving some advice to a young guy who's about to get into that, which, as a financial advisor, he is not allowed to touch anyone in college or younger. And so he gets implicated some stuff, and so it looks like the business is going to go down, and instead he turns around and sues the entire league.
Whew.
And so that looks like the system. The setup for next year is that he's going to take down this system. And that, so Denzel's son is the main football star in the show. He's gotten into kneeling.
So
his storyline is progressing that of do we go along? Are we offended?
Not?
But like, do we go along with this or do we try and make change in history and be the change that we want to see in the world and stuff like that? So the season, it almost felt like when you watched the second last episode of a season of a show where you can feel the chess pieces being moved and know that something more interesting is coming.
Yeah.
That's what this season felt like.
But it took the whole season for it to happen.
The second half of the season was infinitely better than the first because there was so much Russell Brand. And like, I don't mind a little bit of Russell Brand from time
to time. It seems a bit jarring though.
Okay.
In that show.
Last season had Steve Guttenberg as the most annoying guy on television ever.
Well, he was, his character was annoying?
Really annoying. And somehow Russell Brand came on this year and just shat all over that.
Jeez.
And stole the prize. Because holy crap, he is a petulant little shit.
Wow.
Yeah, it's
that
it's,
show
it's
is...
Russell Brand using everything he learned on like forgetting Sarah Marshall and getting to the Greek
and being that petulant character, and Arthur, but then marrying it
with someone who's actually very, very talented and there's a reason why they are at the level they are. And so his insane diva-ness lends the character a lot of weight. But yeah, so I know I sound conflicted and stuff. It was a good season. More for what it's alluding to and what where I hope it's going.
Which is cool that you have finished a season and now amped for the next.
Yeah.
That's always a good way to end.
Yeah, and like there's some hints throughout that there's some shenanigans and maybe a big scam being ran. Mm. And then like the tail end is all about the sting. I don't know if you've ever seen the film The Sting.
I haven't seen it, but I know what it's about. Mm.
If anyone listening who's seen The Sting, you know what I'm talking about. And you'll know what to watch for Ballers. The Sting gets name dropped a few times this season. And then at the end, you're like, oh.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I haven't seen Ballers, but now I know that Steve Guttenberg's in it.
Now you're interested.
I'm like, He's only in season three.
Well, I might just watch season three.
Just watch that and then go back to Police Academy and Cocoon.
He plays a...
that's it.
I will.
Guttenberg plays...
And Three Men and a Baby.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And Little Lady.
Yep.
Guttenberg plays a very rich, wealthy casino and hotel tycoon. So you can see who he might be slightly alluding to.
No, I can't figure out who that could possibly be. I'm intrigued now. I need to watch Ballers. Oh, another thing to add.
There are only
10
episode seasons.
Okay,
where can you find it?
They're on HBO, so you'll find it on iTunes or on your cable streaming
service. Foxtel will be sitting there for you.
Or Tom's iPad.
We can just borrow it. Yeah, borrow it.
No, you can watch it with me.
Okay.
You want to borrow my iPad.
Fair enough.
That joke was so funny. Last time I heard it, I nearly fell off my dinosaur. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
I watched on Netflix Outlaw King, which was that Chris Pine movie where he was going to play a Scotsman. I, being not from Scotland, I was slightly impressed with his accent, but at the same time, I'm not sure if he did a wonderful job or not. He didn't sound American throughout most of it, which I guess is good. But I know as somebody who's Australian, the minute you hear somebody pretend to be Australian, you know immediately. Yeah. So maybe Scots
it was
jarring.
Did he talk about Partick Thistle?
You know, but you
everyone's
had
favourite soccer.
You get out the Scottish thistle and go, here you go, my lad, my lady, my queen. So he plays a bloke called Robert the Bruce.
Robert the Bruce, oh hi.
Oh hi.
Such a Scottish name.
Scottish name. He was
King
Robert.
Anyone who's got the as a middle name.
I know, it's pretty big, big time. So he was from the 14th century and he wanted to take Scotland back from England. Yeah. More
make Scotland great again.
Great again, exactly. From King Edward, I think, the first, who I went, as soon as he came on, I went, hang on a second. You're Stannis Baratheon, so played by the same actor who's Stannis in Game of Thrones. A couple of Game of Thrones actors in there, actually.
Oh, you'd hope so.
Yeah, the ones that have died, you know. So they're in there. I don't know. I kind of found it a little long in that they would have these big battle scenes where there were horses and people and axes and swords and that. I'm like, oh, maybe, I don't know. The story's interesting because it was a real story. It actually did happen. That in itself was interesting, but I just thought, oh, it's just, I feel like I've watched this in Braveheart before.
Sure.
So I kept thinking
scene one,
William
Scottish
Wallace was going to wander in. Well, he couldn't wander in, but that's all in there anyway. But yeah, it looked great. It was very cinematic. They obviously spent a lot of money on it. Not sure why they need a Chris Pine to play a Scotsman, but
maybe it's got Scottish blood.
Maybe that's not how you make Scottish kings.
What, Gerard Butler or? Who's some big name Scottish people?
One of the blokes from the Proclaimers. Get him in there. I think
Frankie Boyle.
I think if you're a big fan of like that medieval, possibly even fantasy genre, or the historical, I know a lot of people love the whole history of the royals over in that part of the world. Watch it and you'll get a lot out of it. But for people who are just like, I wonder what Chris Pine's like doing a Scottish accent, watch for 10 minutes and then you'll be all right. You can move on.
I want to see a Scottish film, like a history biopic film about why they deep fry everything.
I want to know that too.
Drop me Mars bar. That was a bad accent, but you know, I've dropped my Mars bar in the deep fryer.
Ah.
Oh, pull it out.
Was that the Scottish? I thought that was Northern. It was like someone from Newcastle.
Scots are known for that internationally, but as somebody who grew up a little closer to Scotland than we did, maybe you know more.
I could be wrong.
Okay, we all could be.
Yeah, they do like fish and chips,
haggis,
haggis and tatties are potatoes,
and that's about it.
Porridge.
Oh yeah, that's not how you make porridge.
Yeah.
Drink.
And they like to.
I think it's neeps and tatties is actually the Scottish thing. Neeps.
What's a neep?
Parsnip.
Ah, right.
Neeps and tatties.
So they've got parsnips and potatoes. Lindsay, have you watched anything else?
We watched Can We Go to Good Place?
Oh, Good Place is coming up soon.
We put that behind the spoiler warning.
We will get to that really quickly. I'm going to power through a couple of things. Well, mine is not necessarily a show. It's just a audiobook that you had lent me. Now,
sure.
I've read World War Z or World War Z before. I've read it in written form. But you said, try out the audiobook. And the audiobook's amazing. And it's really good because if you've read the book before, you would know that each chapter is a completely different story from a different part of the world when World War Z, the zombie war, happened, where humanity had to fight against this disease. And so they have all these amazing actors like Alan Alda, Mark Hamill's in it. There are some great people. And
Mark
then
Hamill
some
does a good voice.
Oh, he's amazing. He's absolutely amazing. And there are some where you think, that's probably not the accent, but I don't know enough to be able to say yes or no. But then the Australian came up. And at first I went, is this an Australian who's been living in LA for a while? And then the more I listened to the chapter, I thought, no, that's an American trying to be Australian. Don't get me wrong. He was doing an amazing job. But as an Australian, there were glaring moments. There were just words where he said military. Well, we don't say it that way. We say military. Even if you're an Australian who's been living over there for a while, you'd still say military. Military. And he talked about trash. Now, I know that he's just reading what's written, but we don't say trash. We say rubbish or garbage. Probably more rubbish, don't we?
In America, I had to a water bottle going through customs, and I said, oh, don't worry, just put it in the bin.
Oh, they don't know what bin is.
He's like, no, you can't take it with you, because he thought I meant the bin, like, in front of me. I'm like, no, just put it in the bin. He's like, no, you can't put it in the bin. So we had like a bit of an argument, and then we.
Who's on first?
Exactly.
So
yeah. So it was just that I have no idea what that character said. He was the astronaut, if you remember the story. But you know, as an American, he was doing a great job. But I just thought, there's so many Australians. Just get an Australian. We've had that discussion in.
Yeah,
with
get
the
Luke Hemsworth. He's not that busy.
No, he certainly wasn't when they were not filming, recording that.
You know, he's for 18 months. He's twiddling his thumbs, waiting for Westworld to come back.
Hurry
again.
Up! I want to put my security suit jacket on again. Still, it is an amazing audiobook. And if you're looking for another one to get into, World War Z.
Where did you listen to it?
I listened to my car.
Yeah, very good.
It's great. I love driving around listening to chapters. They're quite quick. as well. They're punchy. They give you enough and then they go and move on to the next story. It's great. I love it.
Nice.
It's a great story anyway.
Yeah.
It's not the movie.
The movie's all right.
It's all right, but it's not the book at all.
No.
At all.
And Brad Pitt inexplicably. Thank you. Has his scarf on the whole time in the same place. It's like you just come crashing down on a plane. How have you still got your scarf
on? It would be over my face.
I was so excited for that movie because they added Peter Capaldi and then he wasn't in it that much.
Damn. Mm. That's not fair.
And they made a big deal out of the fact that Matthew Fox is in that film. He's actually the fifth billed actor in that film. And he appears in two shots at the beginning of the film and they cut the rest. He was going to have a storyline where he was going to attempt to rape Brad Pitt's wife.
Oh, I do not even remember him in it. That's how much of an impact he made.
I think they cut him at the same time
he got edited.
It was when he was in trouble for potentially, allegedly... swinging some punches at his missus.
I remember he had some issues. Mm. Yeah. What did you watch this week?
So I watched the finale of season 13 of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Loved it?
Yes.
I've heard great things about this episode. Just on social media, a lot of people have a lot of time for it.
It was called Mac Finds His Pride. Last season, Mac, who is the musclehead idiot security guard wannabe bodybuilder character, it's an ongoing joke in the show as to what his sexuality is, and he's been in denial. And last season, he admitted and came out to the rest.
Mm.
And so this season, there's been some subtle digs going on in the background and stuff like that. And the actor got super ripped, was in like ridiculously good shape. And then in this episode,
a lot of protein.
We find out that it was actually for a really good reason that he was getting ripped, and he's been attempting to find a way to explain his sexuality to the others. And this show that is always about dick jokes and being as vile and puerile as ever. Like, I watched it by myself once, and the ending hit. And I'm not going to say the ending because, as you might have seen from other people that have talked about it, it is the most surprising moment on television this year for me by a mile.
Yeah.
It comes from... so left field, the jokes stop.
Yeah, it's Hannah Gadsby level cross genre.
Mm.
It breaks the show forever.
Really?
Like the show, it's such a poignant moment that I don't know how they can go back to the silliness.
Wow.
I don't think they can put that, like it breaks his character.
Wow.
In such a way that I don't know if they can put him back into the box that he used to be in.
Mm.
And it's just so incredibly ballsy. And the first time I watched it, it floored me. And then watching the episode again with Linz, because it was that good, I was like, I'm going to watch this with you. All the jokes that happen throughout at his expense, when you know what's going to happen later, hit so differently.
Really?
And all of a sudden, this episode that the first time you watch is just silly jokes, and then there's a swerve at the end that makes you go, oh, shit. When you watch it the second time, this stuff is so powerful and emotional, and it helps you get context for what's going to happen later. So when that happened, I will happily say, I was bawling my eyes out sitting on the couch.
And that's what I've heard a lot of people had that reaction.
I think it's more of a guy thing. I would say it's guys that are having that reaction because it's such...
I didn't have any reaction to it, but I haven't watched much of it.
So you haven't been invested in the series.
And I don't think I'm the audience. I was a bit nonchalant about it. Tom was very effective. Mm. So
having had a few guys... very close to me come out of the closet over the years. This episode is a perfect, I won't say perfect, but it's just a wonderful microcosm of what that experience is like, and more importantly, what that is like trying to help the people around you understand.
Mm.
So it's not normally in this sort of thing, you know, it would be a very special episode and it's about Mac coming to terms with his stuff, whereas this episode was not. It was, he'd come to terms with it, and he's a silly character that everyone hangs shit on and makes fun of all the time for being inept and never getting anything right. And this one opportunity, he got it right.
Mm.
And it just really explains, as a guy from a very young age, you're taught to bottle everything down and not talk about your emotions and not share them. And it, through the power of what happens on screen, no words conveys what that sort of emotional stunting has done to this character.
Wow, isn't it amazing that a show can do that and have so much of an impact on you as a watcher.
You can see me now, I'm choking up thinking about it now.
That's all. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah, and even
that
though
it can do that.
I was in the audience, so still watch it. Like, if you don't think you might like it, but still watch it because there's still a lot to gain from it. Like Tom said, you can really appreciate and understand, you know, the gravity of what we think is a, you know, coming out. It's just such a weird concept.
Yeah.
Plus, fucking masterful physical comedy acting from Danny DeVito.
Oh, he's amazing, yeah.
So it's basically a two-hander between Danny DeVito and Rob McElroy, who's who's Mac. He's creator, director, writer of the show and everything like that. The other characters, some of them pop up for maybe 20, 30 seconds of the episode. That's it.
Because they just don't have time for them.
It's just not the story they're telling.
Okay.
And it's all so much of it. There's a recurring phrase throughout that Danny DeVito says, which is just, Mac, I love you. I don't get you. I didn't used to get you. I thought you were weird. Now you've come out and there's all this gay stuff and I don't get it. I'm supportive and I want to back you. I love you, but I don't get it. And that phrase keeps coming up back and, like, comes throughout of him trying to help what's basically, like, a disgusting 70-year-old racist misogynist and slowly bring him around to some level of self-awareness.
And understanding.
And he shoves toilet paper up his nose the whole episode and it's hilarious.
he tries to break down a door. And the door opens and then bounces straight back into his face, busts his nose up. So the episode is him using different things to try and stop the bleeding. And at one point he's like, I'm going to use these hot wing chicken pieces, and, like, jamming them up his nose, or lime and
lemon
salsa
and
water.
Hot glue.
There's a lot of bad choices going on here.
But look, in the same way, I'm pretty sure we talked about it about a year ago now. Same way that Nathan For You finale from last year hit me like an emotional freight train that I was not ready for. That's what this episode did.
Wow.
So maybe this is the way comedy's going.
Maybe it is.
It's serious time swerve to get real.
Yeah. It throws it into seriosity. All right. Well, we've been watching a lot of stuff. We've been talking. This has been a big episode because there's just been so many big things to talk about. So spoilers in a moment, but let's do a bit of a quiz first.
Birthday quiz.
It's a birthday quiz. It's not actually birthday themed because I thought maybe we'd done an awful lot of it. So it's called Which Famous Person Narrated This Audiobook?
Oh.
Of course, for some of them, you're going to need clues. So I'm more than happy to.
I was going to say Morgan Freeman each time and I'm going to hit one eventually.
Find a different actor.
Oh, yeah.
We'll go with Harry Potter
Stephen
first.
Fry.
That's right. We're making it easy. Then we're going to go a little left of field with Anne of Green Gables. This is a newer audiobook, I would have to say, because Anne of Green Gables is very old.
It's a Anne woman. Anne Hathaway.
No, she was in Mean Girls.
Wanda Sykes.
This is in The Notebook.
Amy Poehler.
Oh, what's her name? Rachel McAdams.
Yeah, Rachel McAdams narrates Anne of Green Gables. Is Anne of Green Gables Canadian?
Possibly, yeah.
Maybe.
I think she's just of the Green Gables.
Oh, right. Okay,
I'm not sure where that's currently located.
Of country Green Gables, right. Ready Player One.
Simon Pegg.
Oh, no, American. Has a huge YouTube channel.
Oh, Will
channel.
Wheaton.
Yeah,
yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Simon Pegg's in the movie.
Yes, yeah. Will Wheaton, is it? I can't. What about Lemony Snicket's A Series of Unfortunate Events?
Danny DeVito.
Gosh, it's a hard one to say quickly.
Neil Patrick Harris.
It's a English actor. He was probably most famous for a 1970s musical that he was in, and he cross-dressed.
Oh, Tim Curry.
Yeah, Tim Curry. Read that. All right, let's go to a very popular one at the moment, Handmaid's Tale. The latest version has an actress who has been around for quite a while. She's been in a television show with Jared Leto. She's starred with Leonardo DiCaprio. Claire Danes. Yeah, Claire Danes. The version I listened to, though, on Audible, maybe you can pick. I just picked whichever one it was. It was Joanna David. She's an English actress. You would know her face if you saw her.
Sure.
I couldn't tell you what she was in, though. And finally, do you remember a couple of years ago, To Kill a Mockingbird author, Harper Lee? Something about a Watchman. Yeah, Set a Watchman. This is the narrated version. It's an actress. She's won an Oscar. She's American.
Meryl?
Younger. Has been in a
Jennifer Lawrence
TV show recently that she has produced with Nicole Kidman.
Oh, Reese Witherspoon.
Yeah, Reese Witherspoon reads it. So a lot of big
Reese
names.
Reese Witherspoon is up to a lot at the moment.
She's very busy. So, yeah. Very busy lady. And does a fair bit of tweeting as well. She's not a bad one to follow, actually.
She's got like a little YouTube channel. I don't know if it's supposed to be on YouTube.
but that's where you found it. You didn't put it there.
And she talks to like cool people like Dolly Parton and Pink about stuff.
Okay, I'm going to start watching that.
It was only short, like 5-10 minutes.
That's all you need for YouTube. Well done, guys. That was good. Let's get into the spoiler section.
Spoiler alert. In 3, 2, 1. You have been warned.
Who'd be the worst person to read an audiobook?
who's someone you could... Like, for me, it's Gilbert Godfrey, who's the guy that voices the bird from Aladdin.
Oh, man. See, I was going to go for the monotone bloke. He, a comedian, has curly hair but is balding.
Stephen...
I don't know if he's around anymore, but he would talk like this.
I know exactly
who he is. He's that guy. I just feel like that would really drag it out.
And he told dad jokes and real simple stuff like this. How am I... Stephen, I listened to so much of his stuff when I was young because he's...
Problem is, now I'm just thinking of Stephen Fry because that was the name that we came up with.
If you're listening and you know who we're talking about, scream it in the air right now.
What do you want to talk about first, spoiler-wise? Do you want to talk about The Happy Place or do you want to talk about... the other show, Walking Dead.
I think we'd do Good Place first.
I think so too. I was a fan of this episode.
Me too.
I enjoyed when when Eleanor put those in her ears, insisted on watching 5 seconds, and then comes back with her
Hair burned off and spitting teeth out.
It was so funny.
I love that, like, 20 minutes later, she's back to normal, but
there's still singeing. That's right.
Coming off her head.
She's like, so I've always wanted to know, was I a hot, bald girl?
No.
Yeah,
that was a stellar episode.
Oh, what a great episode. Watching Eleanor discover her love for Chidi. Because we didn't get too much of that reboot.
No, we never saw reboot 119.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, and they don't quite... Their relationship in any level hasn't been quite revealed yet. Even not just that reboot, but the fact that they keep on needing to go find each other. That
always.
Kind of past hasn't...
Yeah. It doesn't reboot the series too much, the show too much, but it does make me still want to watch the next episode to see how she acts around Chidi now.
Sure.
I think that will be interesting and funny because she does that awkward, funny, shut up, what are you, shut up, I'm not weird, you are.
She doesn't want to be vulnerable.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the two MVPs of the episode was Chidi getting pushed into the lake and going, why? So dejectedly. And that iguana was the best thing ever. Climbing on the top of her head and she kept acting.
The whole way through. That was amazing. That was so good.
Yeah.
And I knew that you would like the fact that he was wearing a cute little cowboy blue.
That's what they do on Scaled.
That's exactly
Yeah, there was a lot of people who had to keep a straight face in that scene whilst that was happening.
Yes.
So,
it's just
golf clap.
What a perfect
well done, guys.
What a perfect spirit animal for her.
Oh, totally.
I mean, I'm sure there was a production discussion of do we get her a sloth? Yeah. Because listeners, if you've never seen Kristen Bell,
the Ellen YouTube
loving a sloth. Yeah. Well, she was on that. She was on Celebrity Animal Encounters. She talked about she had a birthday party where Dax Shepherd, her husband, arranged for a sloth to come. And she just made everyone in the party go and sit in the other room.
She just wanted to be
with
the sloth.
She just played with the sloth for 2 hours.
Don't you want to be her friend? So
I really
bad.
Do.
Like, I didn't do. Get the, like, everyone want to be Jennifer Lawrence friends. Like, nah. But Kristen Bell, yes, please.
Yes. She seems amazing. Yeah. I'm also excited to see, we finally Shaunly got to see
Sean. Came back with Bomberjohn and Glenn and Vicky out of the cocoon.
Trying
How
to mix
funny
it
was
up. That? She's still got the conversation going. Yeah. From ages ago. So, oh, we're way past that, he said.
I'm putting a theory down on audio file mm-hmm. right now for
on
everyone
web.
To listen to, because I shared this with you at the end of the episode. You were like, oh, that's good. And then we started looking up online.
I thought I shared it with you.
Nope.
Oh, no. There's a contested.
There's no contention.
Oh, yeah.
You're about revisionist history. During the flashback when we see that she's just been rebooted and she's this and Eleanor says, that's all good, man, but who the hell are you and who's that guy on the wall?
Mm-hmm.
It's such a throwaway moment.
Yeah.
But then at the end of the episode when Michael's like, when they're saying we need to take this to the next level, Michael's like, I know the perfect person. We're going to rural Canada to meet Doug Fawcett next week.
Because
yes!
The line that Eleanor says before that is the only way that we can be truly free or good or something like that is it because we know what's going to happen at the end. So who is going to have that same theory? Someone who's going to know. Yeah,
someone who knew what 93.4% of what the actual afterlife was.
Wow.
And back in that episode
That's
where
so
we
exciting.
First talked about Doug, it was mentioned that he's from Calgary.
Okay.
Which is rural Canada.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I feel like
we're going.
Between us, we put on our detective hats.
So that one practice. Seems a certain, but also to bear in mind, there is a lot of Dougs turning up in The Good Place. Donkey Doug.
There's an overload of Dougs.
Doug Shellstrop is Eleanor's dad. So could Doug Shellstrop be Doug 95% correct?
Brains
the
exploding.
Timeline seems about right. It just seems too
all
many Dougs.
I'm right with that. Theory is damn good.
So, but he, what did he spent all her money and ran away and seemed like a bad person. But maybe that's just the stories that are being told. Who knows?
Yeah, that's true. And if there's any show that would go and throw a completely different light on something, it would be The Good Place.
Or you can just call all of your characters Doug.
Yeah, that's right. And have people doing exactly what we're doing right now.
So, like, when I found that out, I was like, what's Sahani's parents called? Are they called Doug? What's Chidi's parents? Is his dad called Doug? But they're
no. No. Damn it.
Can we also just for a minute talk about a mirror centaur?
Oh, as soon as they said that, I was like, this is perfect.
Sorry, you're talking about all these Dougs reflecting everywhere. And I'm like, oh, that would be the mirror centaur.
Are you going to wear that to the party?
Oh, if I can get a centaur bottom. I don't know how, like, Jamila that plays Tahani. I don't know how she played a more Tahani version of Tahani. But it was so perfect. The disdain.
Oh, she would be a painful pet to have. Just couldn't
I'm
cope.
Not going to wear these flats to a party.
This is probably one of my favourite episodes of this season.
Yeah. So they've got new players in the Earth, and they're going to meet the
bringing back
like,
a couple of old
godlike
ones.
Figure in Doug, and so there's lots of direction they can go in from here.
I like that they threw out the intentional red herring of having the determinism debate and asking if this is all one stunt being played on Michael, which is a lot of the theory going at the end of the season that we're going to find out that this is just another fake neighbourhood that is a test on Michael.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And again, is Earth just a continuation of the Bad Place? Or are they going to, like...
Could easily be.
You know, figure out, well, this is, you know, if Eleanor's having to confront her vulnerabilities and...
Mm.
You know, Chidi's breaking up with his girlfriend and...
Having to make decisions.
Yeah.
The whole Jeremy Bearmy of it all.
Such a good show.
I've used that phrase so many times already.
And people love it?
Yeah.
Good.
Anyone that's on board, you're all right with me. Yeah. If you know what Jeremy Bearmy is, go eat a dick.
Your best friends. Walking Dead definitely had a different feel to it post-Rick.
Yes.
I knew it would.
So was it finalised?
In what way?
Because I thought Rick was the there was a
Rick's gone from the show.
He's not on the program anymore.
But
he's literally flown.
His body was like
no, there was no dead
he's
body.
He's definitely dead. No there, more.
There was no body. So there was like, an explosion.
This explosion. So
there's
pretty
an
big.
Avenue for him Bye, to come Rick. Back.
No, not to Walking Dead. He's been taken in a helicopter elsewhere, like as in potentially a different country.
Okay.
And what they've alluded to so far, and there was a 6-year time jump. So if Rick hasn't found his way back in 6 years, he ain't coming back.
So it's all about living this in this world that Rick was trying to build without Rick, and Michonne, surprisingly enough, was not surprisingly enough, was there still being sad, still wearing his clothes, still living the way Rick would want people to live.
Raising a child that she presumably had with Rick.
You assume so. You only see the kid a couple of times, but we now get a young Judith who likes to talk a lot, and kids who talk a lot in zombie shows can be a little grating.
Yeah.
I'm finding her a bit grating.
Yeah.
Carol's got long hair for...
Reasons.
Eugene's lost his mullet.
And became a goddamn badass.
He is awesome. That's probably the best part of it.
Oh, you know I cheered.
Yeah, you did. One at a time just went and took these zombies out, four in a row. Nobody had to move because Eugene was there.
He used to collapse on the ground if one would come at him and rely on other people to step in. And he sees That's some people do. Doing that same thing. People, other people scared, and he just runs up and decimates a bunch in a line.
Oh, very good. Yeah.
He's
the man.
It's the simplest way to show his extreme character growth. The mullet is gone.
Mm-hmm.
He has a rat's tail now, but
but baby steps.
He has become almost like an Abraham or a leader.
Yeah, he's an Abraham pretty much. Well, with his own Eugene stamp to it, which is why he's slowly trying to go to Rosita for something I've always wanted to tell you. Don't make this awkward, she says.
I believe you are getting very close with that priest.
Yeah, what is that? I'm not sure I can buy that.
I feel sorry for the actress that plays Rosita because the only time she ever gets an interesting storyline is when she's coupled with a man.
That's a good point.
It's you cannot play the Bechdel test. With her?
Bechamel.
Oh,
I was like, bechamel sauce. It's delicious.
Is it to do with Gilmore Girls, a bechamel test?
Maybe.
I don't know. It's
bechamel test is how much a woman talks without talking about a man.
Can two female characters on screen have a discussion that's not spurred or the result of a man?
Yeah.
And she can't.
Maybe the percentage of that compared with the rest of the film.
Yeah. She cannot...
She cannot.
We don't know much about her.
And she's picked Gabriel?
Well, dude was with Anne/Jadis earlier this... Like, they've suddenly decided that half-blind old clergyman Gabriel, who has been a pussy and intentionally let people die and all this sort of stuff for years, just all of a sudden he's a badass now and gets the ladies. Everyone loves that milky pupil.
It doesn't make sense.
That makes sense at all.
You'd have Eugene as a love interest before you would have him. Put Jerry in there, although we saw Jerry had coupled up already. But Jerry's more of like a, you know, love interest to anybody. I can see Rosita liking him. He gets the job done. He's strong like Abraham.
Bury his axe in her hatchet.
Yes, he will. Yeah, Gabriel just seems like an odd character to pick as leading man.
They keep pushing
romantic
him.
Leading man. Anyway, I knew it would happen. I'm feeling uncomfortable without the lead character, Rick, there.
And Maggie. Maggie's
gone. Maggie's not there either. It just feels uncomfortable to me. I'm sure I'll get used to it. I am pretty psyched about seeing where Rick goes in the three made-for-TV movies that he's signed on for.
I will say that it is absolutely crazy the look Aaron has now
because
he is what Rick is in the comics. Long bushy beard, one arm missing.
One arm, I did notice
that. He lost an arm earlier this season, so he now has like this badass metal contraption.
Oh, very cool.
And there's like pistons and stuff that he can pull so he can pincer at things. Because you can't make a full prosthetic without proper tools, instruments, and knowledge. So they've got instead something that looks like it's almost like an Inspector Gadget hand.
Gosh, you should see the one in Norseman. It's hilarious. Oh, it's so funny. If to watch the Norseman for any other reason, you only need to see that because it's hilarious.
Sure.
Aaron would not have any time for it.
I did like that when Aaron walked into town, Grace, who was the baby that Rick stole from the Saviors.
Yep, yep.
And Aaron had taken in just for the time being. Mm. Aaron had made a big thing of it just for the time being. She's now living with him calls him dad and adopted child. There's a lot of little things.
There's a lot
things.
Of adopted kids it's in definitely the show a theme. Now. Yeah. Yeah, Carol's a mum. Michonne's a mum. Two adopted kids. And Aram, I was going to say Aaron, not Aram.
So the women are really and truly in power. It's pretty cool.
That's cool. I need another episode to get used to it, though.
Well, but I think we've got three more until the mid-season break.
So we should, maybe next episode might slowly start to set things up. There should be a huge problem, perhaps whisper-like problem in the last two episodes.
Sure. You'll see as well that they brought in those new characters.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Dan Fogler, who I can't remember. I think his character's name is Luke. I don't care. He's Dan Fogler. He's clearly what Eugene used to be.
Yeah, he is.
He's the music teacher lucky to be alive and aware that he's lucky. And
he's still, to him, he is still a music teacher. When they asked what he is now, he's like, I guess I'm still a music teacher.
And then there's a deaf girl and her sister who are just trying to do the right thing. And then there's a girl named Magna who's spent time in jail and might know a few things more from the comic, but I'm going to keep mum on this one.
She's very much a Walking Dead character.
She super is. And then Yumiko, who was knocked out for most of the episode.
Yeah, we saw her for like 3 seconds.
Who's the bad egg? Because all that talk about we let people in and it went bad on us in the past, one of those people has to do something.
Yumiko.
Yeah?
Deaf girl. The journalist.
You think so?
No, I'm not sure. I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced on any of my predictions. Who do you reckon?
Dan Fogler, because he's Dan Fogler, and you can't cast someone that big.
And have them not do a storyline.
Yeah, he has to die reasonably soon so he can go and make more Harry Potter and, you know, real movies, big things.
Yep.
So In the same way that Fear the Walking Dead had Aaron Stanford pop up for a while, mm-hmm. but you knew that that wasn't going to be a huge ongoing thing, I have a feeling that it's going to be a similar type thing. I don't know if it's him going to be bad or if it's him going to be dying excruciatingly painfully. Yeah.
He could. No, I won't say that because I know it's from the comics.
I hope he dies trying to give a recorder recital to the children.
A recorder?
And zombies just come out and they're lured Pied Piper style by him playing a fucking recorder.
They stick one in the zombie's mouth and they wait for it to, you know, to start blowing on it, and then they remember that zombies don't breathe.
But according to the last 20 seconds of this episode.
Yes, I don't remember it.
You'll recall Eugene and Rosita went and laid in the mud.
That was a new thing.
Were you listening? Were you not listening? Zombies talk now.
I'm going to have to go back and watch it. Seriously.
Where are they? Don't let them get away.
So we've already seen them.
Yep.
Wow.
So this is the Whisperers, who are the next big bad, and they are people that get zombies, cut off the zombie's skin and wear them as a skin suit, live in between the zombies.
It's a little Silence of the Lambs, I understand. But I think it's working for them.
Look, we've seen them in the past cut up zombies and throw on the guts as a good way to walk through the crowd. That was Nick's whole deal on Fear the Walking Dead. These people are just taking that to the next level, but are like stitching themselves inside these suits.
Safety, I guess, if anything. Ah! So, new bad guys.
I'm glad this is behind the spoilers because we may not see that on the show for quite some time. Mm-hmm. I think they'll try and stretch that out. If you didn't know anything from comics, I remember when it happened in the comics, it was like, So, I'm not surprised you didn't catch it.
I didn't catch it at all.
I have a feeling a lot of people
I'm gonna go back
may
and watch
have
it.
Missed it.
So it was that bit where Eugene and Rosita were with mud all over them.
So they're laying there, and then the voices happen, and it cuts to a shot of them, and Eugene's eyes go.
Because I was just watching them. Okay, I'm going to go back and check this out.
Because they're clearly talking to each other in that herd.
Oh, that's really freaky. And what a way to finish this week's episode.
It's a big one.
That was a big one. But you've got to celebrate big, right, when you're 1 year old?
Go big or go home.
We're the big kids now. Linz, thank you for coming in and helping celebrate with us.
Yeah, happy birthday. Well done. You've done a great job. 52 weeks. That's a lot. Not missing one.
We're dedicated to the cause, that's for sure. Tom, should we do 53?
I think we should.
Okay.
Don't stop at 52. 52 in the DC universe is very important because that's the line they drew in the sand for how many universes there are in the multiverse.
Oh, okay.
So we're going to extend further past that. Maybe we'll find the planet where Obama is Superman.
It just makes sense. We're going.
Expanding everyone's universes.
Don't stop believing. And their universes.
Woo.
And universes. Thank you, Tom.
I'm going to give my best Ric Flair. Woo!